Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Now, in the last hour, Donald Trump has been posting on social media telling protesters in Iran that, quote, help is on the way. The massive internet blackout across Iran has been continuing with fears there are thousands dead in the crackdown on anti-government protests, members of the security forces also amongst the dead there. Meanwhile, the new Iranian ambassador to Ireland has been prevented from handing in their credentials to the president and taking up the new role, postponed because of the regime's response to protesters. And we'll be talking to Foreign Affairs Minister Helen McEntee about that after five, because that advice came from her department. But first with us now is Dr. Vincent Durack, Associate Professor with the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Good evening to you, Vincent. Thanks for coming in to us. What do we know about what's coming out of Iran? It's constrained, but what's your best guess?
It is highly constrained in terms of what we really know, given the extraordinary scope of the crackdown on internet and indeed landline communication with the outside world. But I think what's becoming clear and what the Iranians themselves are beginning to acknowledge is the level of repression of the protests, the sheer numbers involved, estimates ranging from the low thousands to up to 10,000-12,000 dead. And this is off the radar in terms of even Iranian repression of previous protest episodes, if you like, going back as far as 2009, if not before that.
Now, there have been popular protests, as you just mentioned there, in Iran in the last decade. What have been generally the triggers for them? To what degree could we say they're part of a running theme, and to what degree is each protest different?
They have been different in many respects. And of course, there is a running theme in terms of dissatisfaction with the status quo, dissatisfaction with the regime. What you're seeing at the moment is a protest movement that has, I think, achieved the scale that it has because the drivers are primarily economic. So in the past, for instance, in 2009, you had a mobilization predominantly by students in response to what was deemed, with some evidence, a somewhat flawed victory of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in presidential elections. But that was very much dissatisfaction with the suppression of what seemed to be a good deal of support for reformist candidates. Then latterly in 2019, you also had a protest movement mobilization in response to cost of living issues, basically. But it was fairly straightforwardly suppressed by the regime. And then the big one up to now was the Woman Freedom Life protest movement in 2022, which was occasioned by the death in custody of an Iranian Kurdish woman, Mahsa Amini, for her failure, as it was deemed, to wear her hijab properly. And that led to some 500 deaths. But it seems to have been largely, again, focused on political issues. But what you've got in the last 2 weeks is something much more broadly based in terms of the distress that is driving the participation of so many people across the entire country.
And there have been
protests.
Moves by the leadership in Iran to try and offer perhaps enhanced cost of living subsidies, albeit very limited, in a country where inflation will potentially just wipe out the benefit of that. So is that likely to ameliorate the protests at all, or is repression likely to be what's deemed the more effective tool by the authorities?
I expect repression will be the more effective tool, because the difficulty that the regime faces at the moment is that it has very limited options in terms of the economy. The economic mismanagement of the Iranian economy goes back years. It hasn't been helped by sanctions, but it's not driven entirely by sanctions. It has been deepened, of course, by the costs associated with the war in June of last year and the impact of all of that. The economic inducements, as you say, are limited and likely to be wiped out in any case by the rampant inflation that's affecting the economy.
There aren't many incentives for those in authority, particularly the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, to engage in any kind of economic reform, because they're embedded so deeply, for want of a better term, as a semi-state within the country, almost a state within a state.
Absolutely. And the IRGC is an institution, that we need to watch in all of this, because one can talk about the regime and how the regime responds. But you have this parastatal body, which is really operating on an extraordinary scale. It has hundreds of thousands, well over 100,000 men under arms. It has its own navy, it has its own air force, it has its own prisons. And it's answerable not to civilian politicians, not to the president, not to the army, but to the supreme leader, to Ali Khamenei. And on top of all of that then, as you say, it has a very significant stake in licit and illicit economic activities in the country. So it's very much embedded in and also has a very significant political and economic stake in the status quo, but it is also deeply influential.
International's expressions of solidarity with the protesters, you know, people can ask for them to be treated humanely, for the killing to stop, to condemn what's going on. But statements by Donald Trump encouraging them to keep protesting, take over their institutions, help is on its way, declarations like that, do they play into the regime's hands when they're trying to portray the protesters as agents of the US and Israel?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see this in two different ways. I mean, one is, one is the playing into the trope that has underpinned regime responses to any protest for the longest time, that that local agency and mobilization is in fact part of a international conspiracy. It's the Zionist entity, or it's the great Satan in the US that's responsible for this, and they're doing this right now. They're accusing people, they're arresting people on the basis of essentially treason, working for foreign powers. But on the other hand, there is no doubt that the regime is, in light of its experience last year, that many people in the regime are quite fearful of what the Americans can do. I mean, they've seen the Israelis, they've seen the extent of penetration of their intelligence sphere, the ease with which Israel and the US engaged militarily last June and wreaked such havoc, not just on military installations, but on political and military and paramilitary personnel.
And the previous repressive regime that was in power up to 1979, that of the Shah Pahlavi, his son is now has moderate support within Iran, but a loud voice outside of Iran. Two members of the Israeli cabinet have expressed support for him. His father enjoyed the support of Israel as well. They had relations there. So again, if he is a loud voice amongst the opposition, does that again help the regime to frame it that way?
Without a shadow of a doubt. And I mean, we've been here before in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, where, exiled voices took it upon themselves to aspire to represent the people of the country from which they had been absent for the longest time. And it's difficult to see how Reza Pahlavi has any really significant support, perhaps among those who are old enough, and you'd need to be old enough given the average age in Iran to remember the Shah and the rule of the Shah and his father. But certainly the fact that that Reza Pahlavi visited Israel, for instance, is enough to render him off limits to most mainstream opposition politicians in the country and indeed very many ordinary Iranians.
Friedrich Merz, the Chancellor of Germany, who said during Israel's 12-day war with Iran that Israel was, quote, doing our dirty work for us, he's come out and said we're now witnessing the final days and weeks of the Iranian regime. Is he being a bit previous in this? If you look at the Syrian experience, snipers shot demonstrators, Assad didn't fall till 14 years later and brought down in a much more divided country by an opposition that had armed elements within it. Iran, a largely homogenous state from the point of view of religion and very effective at repressing demonstrators.
Yeah, I think it's a very, well, confident, I won't say brave, but a confident person who prognosticates on the immediate future of the regime in Tehran. If I'm not mistaken, Merz went on to say something to the effect that a regime that relies solely on repression in order to maintain itself in power cannot stand in the long run. And he's right about that, of course. But as the Syrian experience points out, it makes clear to us how long the long run is the big question.
Okay, Dr. Vincent Durack, Associate Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. Thanks for coming into us.